Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Escobar hits a high fly ball, deep right field. That's trouble. That's back toward the wall. This ball is going to leave the yard. A long home run for Eduardo Escobar. Here's a drive to right center. Might be trouble. Back goes Zobrist to the track. That ball is gone. A home run to straightaway right by John Ryan Murphy. Now, the wind had a lot to do with that one. The pitch swung on and missed strike three, and the ball game is over. So the Diamondbacks snap the Cubs' winning streak at four. The final today, 6-0 Arizona.
I want to go, definitely. But I understand baseball is different than American League. So, disappointed, but that's National League.
You're listening to Rick Camp on 670 The Score, Chicago's sports station.
Welcome in. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock. It's nice to be back on a Sunday morning. It's been a minute. We got a lot to discuss this morning, as we usually do. In the 8 o'clock hour, especially at 8, we're going to talk with Greg Gabriel of The Score and Pro Football Weekly, front office and draft expert, because I was talking with Eli before the show. Eli Hershkovich on the board today. My God, it's NFL draft week, and maybe it's just because the Bears don't have a pick in either of the first two rounds that it really snuck up on me. So I'll play some catch-up getting ready for draft week as it is, even though the Bears really don't have – they don't really have a pick until late. Number 87 overall for that first pick. And then at 8:20, we'll talk with Dan Favale from Bleacher Report and NBA Math about the NBA playoffs. As far as first rounds go, it's been a lot of fun. And I'll ask the obligatory Bulls question. Not quite sure what the obligatory Bulls question is yet, but we'll throw one in there with all the fun that the NBA playoffs has had. But I want to talk to you in the first hour at 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. Happy Easter and or Passover for those out there. I hope you're enjoying a holiday weekend. And we're gonna put a little damper on that by talking about Yu Darvish to start the show and the Cubs right now, because while the Cubs did a lot of great work to get back to 500, that Marlins series, boy, you need the slump buster here and there, and that's exactly what the Marlins are probably going to be for the entire major leagues this year. But another full Yu Darvish experience yesterday. You heard the highlights coming in from The Score and Yu Darvish talking about coming in and hopefully being able to pitch more than five innings and be more consistent. Just to give the line, five innings pitched, three earned, three walks, seven strikeouts, two home runs given up, leaving the ERA for Darvish after the start at 5.96. And it just kind of, with having an inconsistent day at the plate, if the goal is win a series, try and string together series wins, now you're into a Sunday with Tyler Chatwood on the mound. And if the goal is to win the series, you need this one. Mind you, starting against Robbie Ray, who hasn't had the best start himself, but this is what the Cubs are trying to do. So that game yesterday was huge to try and get that series win in their back pocket going into Sunday, so that in a worst-case scenario, it's enjoying some meatloaf. It's the two out of three ain't bad. But really, just trying to look a little bit bigger picture with Yu Darvish. And I know it's been talked about a lot to begin this year, because as you look at organizationally with the Cubs, they haven't been able to bring up or develop any of their own pitchers, especially in the rotation. So there is no wiggle room anymore in terms of the budget. In terms of depth, that's just where the Cubs are, especially on the pitching side of things. And it's just interesting timing, along with the news of a Brandon Morrow. I don't even know if it's necessarily I guess it's a setback because they're originally saying May. Now it's just basically take any expectations off the table for Brandon Morrow for this season. At this point, as a Cubs fan, you have to be thinking anything you get from Brandon Morrow this season has now become a luxury. And it puts a lot of pressure on the Cubs rotation or on the Cubs lineup to be able to produce. So when there are days like yesterday where it's only four hits, that's the kind of game you're going to see. 3-1-2-6-4.
The bounce back after the last timeout wasn't as good, so we got to back off of him once again and just slow things down. It's just where he's at. It's not unlike what had been going on earlier. It was all trending very well. And then, like I said, this last time, just not as good. So we just have to pay attention to what he's saying.
That's Joe Maddon before the game yesterday about Brandon Morrow. So, yeah, with that news, just that's off the table. And it's just interesting that it coincides with same timing that we find out that the demands from Craig Kimbrel on the contract are still fairly lofty for someone that's still unsigned, but at least more reasonable now than you would have thought before. So what's being reported is he still wants a 3-year deal, but in the relative, like, strong reliever market, not top end now as much anymore, but in the somewhere between 40 and the low 50s in terms of million. If you use the Wade Davis contract as a comp, that's 3 for 52. So something along those lines is, you would think at this point, it would be getting close for Craig Kimbrel. He's probably getting a little itchy, and with injuries happening in bullpens and needs becoming clearer and clearer for organizations, maybe a team like the Brewers, like the Braves, those teams could absolutely use a guy like Craig Kimbrel.
Imagine Hader and Kimbrel in the back end of your bullpen.
Yeah, just having more. The Brewers want to have as much flexibility with Josh Hader as humanly possible. And in theory, if all of their arms were healthy and effective, that you would assume just by name recognition, that would be the case, that they would have that flexibility, but it just hasn't turned out that way so far. So that would be something for the Cubs that would, I don't think you make that kind of move and necessarily commit that kind of money just to keep a guy away from a team in your division. I would never advocate for that, especially considering how much the Cubs have already doubled down on spending money on maybe guys that could be considered risky. But to me, it's so interesting of just how much is the all in for right now for this year or two versus trying to, you know, it's not necessarily, I almost equate it to the Bears in a way. And I'll talk about this with Greg Gabriel in the 8 o'clock hour in reference to the Bears. How much are you all in on this short-term window versus the longer-term, still realistic window to compete? With the Bears, I find it interesting in terms of, are you all in for Trubisky while he's under the rookie contract before an extension kicks in, assuming, you know, they come to that point? And then you just say, listen, we're probably going to be bad for a couple years while you rebuild the roster, and then hope to be more competitive towards the back end of a Trubisky contract? Or are you still trying to get young guys now to then feed in when you have to let guys go and the Trubisky contract kicks in so you can more or less keep the window going? And I think it's very similar to the Cubs right now. Financial flexibility is an issue. So do you want to, for the sake of this year and maybe next year, sign Craig Kimbrel to, what would that be, about $14 million per year for the next 3 years, and maybe limit a move that, you know, could come up out of nowhere that could really benefit the team over a longer course of their window down the road? 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. Jim from Streamwood texts in, Cubs' inconsistency of hitting is probably going to be their demise down the road of the season. I mean, I understand they had, of course, they had a bad day at the plate yesterday. However, over the course of the season, I still think as of now, the pitching is going to be more of the concern. You just look it, and it's not that hard. You don't have to go too deep into the numbers to just logically look at, I understand Cole Hamels had a great stretch run at the end of the year. I understand that John Lester has been incredibly consistent. But at some point, age catches up with guys, and it's to no fault of their own. It's just the fact of how long can you truly ride guys that old to be the horses in your staff? It's one thing if John Lester and Cole Hamels at this point were your 3 and 4 guys. Then there's more wiggle room if let's say Jose Quintana and Kyle Hendricks were really stepping up. But I think it really just comes down to flexibility and options are something that early in the Theo Epstein tenure about sustaining success over a long period of time, which, mind you, the Cubs have done. They have done. But when you see reports from around baseball, insiders saying people know the Cubs window is closing. It's obviously not closed by any stretch of the imagination, but they're closer to the end of this prime winning window than they are to, you know, it just being wide open. 312-644-6767-670-11 on the text line. And for me, it really comes back to, and I don't necessarily blame for early in the Theo Epstein regime of hounding hitters early in the draft, because for where the Cubs were, it made all the sense in the world. But I think one thing that may not have been anticipated is the drop in value over the last few years of power guys where that's their main skill. Especially if you look at the free agent market and use that as a barometer. A lot of guys now with launch angle, with everything that's being taken into account at the plate for a majority of hitters in Major League Baseball now, maybe a guy like Ian Happ as a trade chip, who's currently in Iowa, doesn't have the type of value outside of just struggling at the moment, just by profile of player. He doesn't have as much value as he may have when the Cubs drafted him. So when you think about flexibility to improve the roster without necessarily committing a ton of money moving forward and just essentially being able to change out one style of chess piece for another, that limits a little bit of what the Cubs can do. 312-644-6767-670-11 on the text line. And it brings us back to Yu Darvish and how much, of course, he's being relied on. Even just looking at his limited, obviously very limited sample with the Cubs last year and this year. In 2018, he had 40 innings pitched. And Yu Darvish talked earlier in the week about, yeah, you know, I'm me and I'm going to have some walks. But to what extent? In 40 innings last year, where no one would consider Yu Darvish having really been good, he had 21 walks over 40 innings. Now, over just 22 innings, so a smidge over half, he has 18 walks already. He's on pace to have the same amount of strikeouts, but the walks are up a ton. And that has to be alarming at this point. Now, maybe it was not necessarily considered a bad thing that all of a sudden Yu Darvish adds the cutter just kind of for the hell of it, it seemed like. Said he just kind of added it to the repertoire, and because the results were good, a lot of us, you know, me included, were just like, okay, if that's what's going to keep this consistency going, then fine. But once again, with Yu Darvish, he's just one of those frustrating guys. And the guy that he reminds me of, and I think he's much more talented, is a guy like Rich Harden, where you get the 5 innings, you see the great stuff that he has, but still gives up 3 or 4 runs, has some walks, gets the strikeouts, but it's just never an efficient outing.
Early on, maybe the fastball velocity came up as the game was going on. The breaking ball got sharper. I mean, I was surprised how, you know, the home runs they hit. I mean, with the wind the way it was, Escobar crunched that thing. And then he gets 2 quick strikes on Peralta. And then he makes kind of the same pitch, and it's a homer. So they did. They got him quickly, and then Greinke pitched so well. I thought keeping it at 3, which you did do, and that's really not a bad thing. After the beginning of that game, we just could not get to Greinke. I mean, he was keeping us off balance, and Had we been able to get back into the game, I think Yu's performance would have been looked on more favorably because actually he did settle down and do a pretty good job.
Yeah, it was Joe Maddon post game on Yu Darvish, and that seems to be what it is a lot of times. He'll get the early two strikes and then kind of mess around a little bit. And just when, as mentioned before, when the Cubs aren't getting the hitting on that day, they just don't have any wiggle room. And big picture and small picture, it seems like for this year, at least in particular, there's not a ton of wiggle room. It's still an incredibly talented team, don't get me wrong, but you know, it's, you still need to have a little bit of wiggle room within the organization and just within your 25-man roster. So what worries you most about the Cubs? You had Jim and Streamwood saying he's still worried more about the hitting than the pitching on the Cubs, which I find pretty crazy with the way the Cubs have hit the ball more often than not early in this season. 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. I'm Rick Camp. I'm here with you until 9 o'clock. What are your big Cubs concerns? And there's a couple Sox notes to get to as well. In the 8 o'clock hour, we'll shift away from baseball, talk to Greg Gabriel, talk to Dan Favale. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 on the score.
For the most part, though, I think he's been a better strike thrower. I know he's walked a couple guys, and actually the walks hurt him at the bottom of the batting order. But, again, it's kind of watching from the side. He'll be going along very smoothly, and then all of a sudden it'll escape him for a bit, but then he's able to get it back. I agree. It's the early part of the game we have to get him away from, settled into more quickly, and then move it from there. But overall, not horrible, not a bad performance. Like I'm saying, it was the homers early makes it look worse than it was.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon wanting to get Yu Darvish settled earlier in the game. I think that's something really interesting that I'm sure Mullion Hall will bring up with pitching coach Tommy Hotovy during the week. It's a real interesting, how do you get Yu Darvish settled a little more? And quite honestly, and I don't know that it's necessarily to any fault of the Cubs, I think they're still trying to figure that out. And if you just look over Yu Darvish's career, I mean, he's had, obviously he's incredibly talented and he's had success, but I think it's something he's still trying to figure out as well. Welcome back. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock. 8 o'clock, we'll switch gears a little bit, do some NFL draft with Greg Gabriel of the Score and Pro Football Weekly. Got a lot of draft coverage coming up this week on the Score. Thursday night, the first round, even though the Bears aren't participating in the first round, at least as far as we know, still going to have plenty of coverage. Greg Gabriel is going to be with Hub, Dan Pompey, and Patrick Manley from 6 to 10. Julie DeCaro and Arthur Arkish are going to be on 10 to midnight Friday before Cubs pre at 8:05. Joe O is going to be on and doing plenty of draft for day two. And then Saturday, day three, where the Bears are going to have their most volume of picks from 10 to 3 from Soldier Field. It's going to be Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, Hub, Dan Pompey, and David Haw. And then 3 to 6:35, it's going to be the Julie and Maggie show with Greg Gabriel breaking down everything having to do with the NFL draft. So even though the Bears don't have a pick till number 87, it's the NFL, man. You could argue that outside of the Bears in this town, the next most popular thing is the rest of the NFL and really around the country. It's your team and then every other team in the NFL and then everything else. And the NFL draft is always intriguing to me. So we're going to talk about that with Greg at 8 o'clock. The NBA playoffs are going on, so we'll talk to Dan Favale from Bleacher Report and NBA math at 8:20. But right now, we're talking baseball, we're talking the Cubs, and you heard Joe Maddon talking about Yu Darvish, and just, boy, if the Cubs really want to contend, and we're talking to the level the Cubs want to contend, not just get into the playoffs, make some noise in the playoffs, Yu Darvish has to be better. He just has to. Because I mentioned it before, and it seems like John Lester is going to be, you know, John Lester is going to be fine coming back. It seems like his rehab is going right on schedule to this point. But him and Hamels are just older. And at some point, if you're the Cubs, can you truly trust them and have it be a real philosophy to ride two 35-year-old pitchers? They're going to need, I mean, Jose Quintana has been very good lately. Kyle Hendricks looked great in his last start. So that's promising. Those are probably your two guys that absolutely have to step up and that need to make some progression this season back to what they've been. For, and then that doesn't even get to the bullpen. And also, asked you earlier, if the number is 3 for 52, 3 years, $52 million, that's the Wade Davis contract that's been thrown out there as a comp that Craig Kimbrell, still on the market, would like. Do you sign up for that, knowing that your own guys are going to have to get paid soon, and the fact that he's getting up there and his numbers took a dip last year? 815 Texter, since the Cubs window's closing, Theo has to co-sign Kimbrell. The Cubs need a true closer and can't allow the Brewers to sign him. I said in the first segment, I don't think you can purely make signings just to keep a guy away from a team in your division. However, the Cubs have that need as well. And it's just fascinating to me, if you had Truth Serum in Theo and Jed, what's the window? To them, what is the window? When everybody has to start getting paid, when Bryant needs to get paid, when Baez needs to get paid. They've been able to lock up some of, you know, some of your guys. You had the David Bodie contract, which was next to nothing. The Kyle Hendricks contract is nice for the Cubs. At what point does that window close because you're going to be paying your own guys so much that realistically, looking at what's in the minors and the Cubs had not having had high picks and not being as effective on their picks that they've had, at what point does that window close, at least for the short term, until they can bring in more supporting pieces for the big guys that they're going to be able to retain just under large, large contracts? Because going into really drafting Chris Bryant, you knew there was going to be no chance of an early signing with him, unless the Cubs just 100% gave in and gave him exactly what he wanted. Maybe there's a chance of that with Javi Baez, but at this point, I don't see that as that likely. The better and better he plays, the less and less I think it's likely that he signs a preemptive extension. Once again, of course, assuming the Cubs don't just 100% give in. But 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. Where's your biggest concern with the Cubs right now? And maybe related to that, Craig Kimbrell, if it's 3 years, $52 million, so an average of $14 million, considering what that could do to future flexibility in free agency or in trades, do you make that deal right now to maximize this year and maybe next year, and then kind of probably assume that third year is not going to be great? And it's just interesting with where the schedule lines up for the Cubs. Coming into town tomorrow, you've got the Dodgers. And I've been talking about this during the week. You know, when transition goes on the air, it also happens in the producer's studio as well. And I was talking last week with Nick Szczepkowski, who, by the way, is going to be on after the Cubs game today with Mark Grody until 8 o'clock, about just that we both believe the Dodgers and the Astros are just a step above everybody else in baseball. 100%, especially in the National League. Just with, we talk about depth being an issue in the organization for the Cubs. Boy, the Dodgers just keep throwing guys out there. They're so impressive that I understand it's not a hot take or anything like that. Say, hey, the Dodgers and Astros, pretty damn good.
Right, and Christian Yelich slowed him down last night with those two home runs, but the first game all season long for the Dodgers that didn't have an extra base hit was last night.
Yeah, it's and by the way, today you got Yelich, Kershaw. I'm in for that. 847 Texter correctly points out that I am dumb because math is hard. 14 for 3 is 42, not 52. So I pulled the stereotypical hosting thing there where you try and do math on the fly and it just straight doesn't go well. So So yeah, you're looking at just over what, probably just over 16 per year for if it's 3 for 52 for Craig Kimbrell. Either way, in that range, probably similar thought process. I don't know if between 14 and 16 would be the breaking point there. 312-644-6767-670-11 on the text line. I'm not a big win for pitchers guy, but this is pretty staggering from the 708. Yu Darvish has one win in the last 340 days. It's not great. Thompson McHenry, and he's on the score.
Hey, Rick, how you doing? Yeah, I was texting you earlier. Well, I feel the closer is the most important right now because Madden has proven that he's not going to leave the starters in past the sixth inning. So they need this closing by committee has failed, and they proved that the last 2 years. So we need the critical closer. Morrow, with this news about Morrow being hurt for a longer period of time here, the rehab isn't going well. We need that closer, Kimbrell, and we have to stop the Brewers or the Cardinals or anybody else from getting them. And like you said, we do have the need to get him. So, Ricketts is going to have to shell out if they want this championship before this, quote, window closes.
All right, I appreciate the call, Tom, and I think that's such an interesting subplot to the Cubs window is how it works with where the money comes in. You know, you have Marquee that's going to be debuting next year and the extra money that that should bring in. But is that money going to come in, and are the Cubs going to have a grasp of how much money it is to know what kind of wiggle room they have? Is that going to come in too late for this window? For when guys have to get paid. So I started out, before knowing this update on Brandon Morrow, I was still 100% out on signing Craig Kimbrell. It's not 100% anymore. I still would probably lean against it, unless it's, if you could do a 1 year for a big money, which Craig Kimbrell doesn't seem interested in doing, at least to this point, I'd be down for that. But assuming it's going to be a 3-year deal at $52 million, which is 17.1, yay math. That's why we're going to have Dan Favale on at 820. He writes for NBA math, so he'll help me out with that part of it. I understand wanting Craig Kimbrell. If the Cubs were willing to do it and basically say whatever their budget was, be damned by just what it's looked like, the bullpen has looked like, fine. If they want to do it, hey, it's their money. Really, they're making everybody in baseball is making a ton of money, so that really shouldn't stop them. But if it does and they are true and it's been reinforced, they are true to their budget and it's going to hurt them down the road, that's where I would have at least a little bit of pause.
Interesting, too, because, you know, we talk so much about the pitching, but on Joe's show on Friday, he played a clip from Buster Olney, where Olney said that the Cubs might be interested in Mookie Betts. Now, it's so early that we've seen Boston reel off two straight wins in Tampa. Tampa, the best team in baseball right now. So you can't necessarily think that rumor is going to come to fruition. But if they decided to go the offensive route instead of the pitching route, that could be an option too.
Yeah, just lean into make your strength stronger. And Mookie Betts is one of those players that is, he's just so good that philosophy be damned. If you have an opportunity to get Mookie Betts, then you get that done. You just get that done. He is that kind of player. And then you also hope him being in your clubhouse, knowing everybody, seeing how the Cubs operate, makes him want to stay long term. So I could see that being, I mean, once again, Mookie Betts is one of the best players in baseball. If you can get Mookie Betts, you go get Mookie Betts. God, would that be intriguing to know what that would cost? That would be the interesting part of it. If the Cubs try, because they don't really have a whole lot of prospects, it would have to be off of your major league roster, and especially just to get Boston to even consider listening. But what a guy like Mookie Betts would do for the Cubs is incredibly intriguing. 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. And I know Buster only brought that up as a much more of a hypothetical, But that would be an interesting one. If you have that in the back of your mind, of the possibility of that kind of deal as well, how does that change the Cubs' immediacy, the immediate Craig Kimbrel? Because while Mookie Betts is, you know, it's a rental, it would still be incredibly intriguing to see what that deal would take, what it would take to, yeah, what on the Cubs roster is valued to that level to get Mookie Betts. Like, from the Red Sox perspective, what do they want? And then also, how that affects any sort of movement in the reliever market. Paul's in Lake Forest and on the Score.
Hey, good morning. Was listening to your show. Spent most of the winter in Florida. Just got back here for Easter. Listening to what's going on with the Cubs, and from what I've heard and understand, Papa Ricketts is not putting any more money into that team. And they can't wait to get rid of Madden's $6 million salary. They're in debt almost $1 billion with everything they've done there with Cubs land over there on Addison and Waveland, and he's not putting any more money in. He's called his loans into his kids.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call, Paul. I can't necessarily verify what Paul's saying figure-wise over there. I mean, I know that every team in baseball is making a ton of money. You could just go off of the MLBAM, the MLB Advanced Media, off of that number. Every year, every team is making money. So I don't know what Papa Ricketts was thinking in terms of how quickly those loans would be paid off. Maybe that's part of it. But the thing is, there's a lot of profit coming in, and that's where it's interesting, is how much goes to the business side. What percent is going to baseball ops versus business ops? And it's something we'll never find out. There's no way that would ever leak out. However, you know, it was at the beginning of the year that very much got called into question of what was the budget. How realistic is it to maintain the expectations that the Cubs have with this roster, with the budget that they had? And how did that jive with what Theo was told when he was brought in and basically told, we'll do whatever we have to do, you know, make the moves that you need to make? 217 Texter, the Cubs can afford Kimbrel, especially with Zobrist, Hamels, and Morrow contracts ending after the season. Once again, that's only for one of the years, though. Now, mind you, those are big contracts. No doubt about it. However, it would be a 3-year deal. So you'd have this year with those guys, you'd have next year without, but you also have the escalating prices of your own young guys. Arbitration's not as cheap as it used to be. That's part of the reason you're seeing so many guys sign early, because in certain ways, it's mutually beneficial. Now, Ozzie Albies' one will never make any sense to anybody, really, outside of just straight get some money right now. That's the only thing I can think of, is that, you know, there's a family aspect, and just wanting to get that done right now, make sure that people have their money and they're able to get out of whatever immediate situation they're in. Now, mind you, I don't know that for sure, but I'm trying to think logically of what would dictate that. And that's really what comes to mind for me. But, you know, get out of arbitration, and it also gives some certainty and life-changing money to the players. So that's why you've seen a flood of early contract extensions signed.
It reminded me of, and I know Quintana has regressed, but it reminded me of when he signed that 5-year, $30 million deal. More team friendly than player friendly for Quintana, considering the numbers at the time.
Oh, absolutely. And more than ever, those contracts play a role in the deals, in the trades that happen. Because if the money wasn't a factor, I don't know that the White Sox get near as much for Jose Quintana as they did. Now, mind you, they did trade him when he was at basically the peak of what he had been. But still, the fact that that contract gave the Cubs as much flexibility as it has, for as much as Darvish being an enigma at $126 million, Jose Quintana seemingly getting a little more consistent now, at least as a mid-rotation guy at the moment, at that number, gives the Cubs extra flexibility. 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. What's your biggest concern right now with the Cubs? And are you ready to pull the trigger, especially if you were someone that wasn't there before? With the news of the Brandon Morrow setback, are you ready to pull the trigger on a Craig Kimbrel multi-year deal? I think it's incredibly interesting. At the top of the hour, we'll change gears, go to the NFL Draft Talk with Greg Gabriel of Pro Football Weekly and The Score. I'm Rick Camp, here until 9 o'clock on The Score. Welcome back. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock. At 8:20, we'll talk NBA playoffs with Dan Favale from Bleacher Report and NBA Math. 8 o'clock, switch over to some NBA or NFL draft with Greg Gabriel because the draft is this week. I know for a lot of us, it's jumped up and just kind of bit me yesterday when I'm looking through everything, getting ready for the show, and I'm like, oh, normally I'm all about it. I at least know of everybody that's in the first round and what the kind of themes are going in, but that's what Greg's here for, to get us ready, give us that primer at 8 o'clock. Some of your texts at 670-11 talking Cubs and big picture along with the immediacy of right now. And a 630 texter, biggest fear for him is that Bryant's in decline and Schwarber isn't good. Now, when all the Babe F and Ruth stuff came out about Kyle Schwarber, I jokingly, just to, you know, kind of play troll at the station a little bit, was calling him Kyle Dunn. If you look at the numbers, at least in the last, you know, year plus, Kyle Dunn wouldn't be too bad right now, considering in his career where Adam Dunn was at this point versus where Kyle Schwarber is right now. So that's absolutely been an issue. And then also just Chris Bryant has now, obviously, last couple days, better. Some wind-aided, some not. But Chris Bryant is just not off to a good start. And when you pair that with last year, now there's a lot of context that goes into that with the shoulder and everything else. But the Cubs need Chris Bryant to be an MVP candidate, to be where they need to be, where they expect to be, LCS and better. Chris Bryant has to be the Chris Bryant that Cubs fans really expect him to be that type of guy. OPS well into the 900s. MVP year, he had an OPS of 939. He hit 292, 385, 554. That was the slash line. 2017 technically had a better OPS, 295, 409, 537. That's what you expect from Chris Bryant. MVP candidate. The center of the offense. That's what he should be. And one home run on the year. Opening day. Opening day after it felt great. It was, okay, makes all the sense in the world. Just, you know, okay, working through the shoulder stuff seems fine for now. Home run on opening day. There's your validation. Here we go. And it's just been a struggle ever since. And obviously, we're still in small sample size theater. It has not even been a month. But it still has to be concerning paired with last year. 100%. Nothing exists or nothing should exist without any context. Unless it's just for joke purposes, which is always fine. But it leads into what some of you out there, 312-644-6767, 6711 on the text line, are talking about. Your biggest fears with the Cubs for the rest of this season and moving forward, they involve Chris Bryant. Think how crazy that is.
Yeah, and you go back to last year with Chili Davis, the line drive approach. So that was a lot of people's excuse was, well, Chris Bryant's shoulder is banged up and it's not the approach he wants to play under. And I know some people say, well, players are their own hitting coach, but that was still the philosophy under Davis. You have a different philosophy, Chris Bryant's philosophy under John Mailey. And now you start to wonder, Ozzie Guillen brought this up with Mullion Haw earlier in the year, is the shoulder really an issue? And the deeper we get into the season where the power isn't there, it starts to become more of a question.
Absolutely. I mean, think about going into this year on Easter. It's fair to point out that Chili Davis was fired for a lot of Cubs hitters' sins. And I'm sure some of that, a good amount of that was Chili Davis related. But boy, that was just kind of thrown out there as a blanket. Well, hey, this was Chili. let's get started. Let's bring in someone that the players want. You know, Anthony Iaposi, get this guy, you know, bring him back in. Someone that the players can relate to, that just, you know, maybe just relates to them better, brings up the things, hits the philosophy that the front office wants, and that's going to make things better. Even if really in their heart of hearts, the front office thought it's much more of the players hitting their normal numbers, getting back the positive type of regression that a lot of the Cubs hitters needed, and that it was just, you know, you needed a different voice in there. Fine, but looking at the way it's been, they've hit the ball overall, but for your main guy, who should be considered your main guy, Chris Bryant, to not have that, it's problematic. And just think, if it wasn't for Javi Baez at this point, man, where he's, how impactful, we thought last year he was impactful and the MVP candidate. If the Cubs are going to remain in the playoff race to this point, and obviously it's incredibly early, Cubs just dip back under 500, of course. But when you have a three-game series starting next week against the Dodgers, I'm not into necessarily statement games or anything like that this early in a year, but just to kind of see what that team looks like, independent of looking at the Cubs, looking at the Dodgers, we're 14-9, not lighting the world on fire necessarily, but they are the team in the National League. I understand the Brewers have been a big story because they're in on Kimbrel, because Christian Yelich has kept up his crazy pace so far. But the Dodgers, to me, are still the team in the National League. I really do. And they have so much depth in that organization. They've had to. They've sustained injuries every single year. And they've still been able to get to the LCS, to get to the World Series, just because of how stacked they've been able to keep their farm system. They've invested internationally in the draft. They invest in every single level of the organization. And the Cubs have done that as well. I'm not saying the Cubs haven't. However, the Dodgers just do it better.
When you think about Yelich, 13 home runs, so probably running away with the NL MVP, but then Bellinger batting .407, 10 home runs, 25 RBI with an on-base percentage of .484.
Yeah, remember when Cody Bellinger was not necessarily getting written off, but kind of forgotten about last year? God forbid, he's a young player that went through some of the struggles that young players go through. And I understand a lot of that's been the last couple of years with your Cubs young hitters as well. But especially as we look back at Chris Bryant again, he's in that prime now. He's 27. You have to remember he came up later, just as opposed to guys like, I always default back to your Braves guys, your Ozzie Albies and your Ronald Acuna. I mean, those guys are big-time exceptions to the rule. Being that good that early is incredible. And still, such a coup that the Braves got them on the contracts they did. Because even if, like, Ozzie Albies falls off the face of the earth, more or less, is that really that bad of money? No. It's not bad at all. So as you look at the National League, which, you know, has more and more teams that are looking viable, even just within the Central, one team has a negative run differential so far, and it's the Brewers, which is just kind of odd. Just making sure when they lose, they're losing by a fair amount. But 312-644-6767, 670-11 on the text line. Just what are your main concerns with the Cubs at this moment? Of course, it's April 21st. There's still plenty of baseball season to go. Plenty of twists and turns are still going to happen. But at this point, with the context of the last couple of years, I just don't know how confident I feel about the Cubs going forward with the strength in the division, with the growing strength of young players in the National League. But I'm excited at the top of the hour to get to talk some NFL draft with Greg Gabriel. Because especially now more than ever, it's basically always NFL season. It's always football season. You can find something to talk about. There's always intrigue, not necessarily about the schedule release as much. You already knew who the Bears were going to play, but it's just a matter of when they're going to play them. If you have any quirky stretches, going out to London to play the Raiders, that kind of thing. But this draft is incredibly intriguing to me because I at least normally consider myself a bit of a draft dork. I don't like to, I don't think that I necessarily know stuff about the players. I haven't scouted them myself. I just normally am well-versed on what people that I trust think of players. However, when I look at this draft, it's not what you'd probably consider a sexy draft. Now, maybe I think it's sexy because of, well, just being a fat guy and appreciating fat. The fact that this is a line-driven class, a lot of defensive linemen, a lot of offensive linemen early, that stuff's intriguing to me. And it also, I forget where I heard it first, and I wish I remembered, but just the thought that teams can't lie in the draft. Once you get to the draft, that's when you find out what teams really think of their short-term, their long-term, and individual players on a roster. Even a little bit of how do they feel about maybe contract possibilities with whoever it is. You know, a first-round pick that maybe has been okay, deserving of some extension, but maybe not big money. If that position is drafted in the first round, the year of that option, or when that contract extension would have to be signed, that's what's intriguing. And we saw it with the Bears. We've seen it this offseason. It sure seems like they have done more than their fair share of homework on the running back class. We'll talk to Greg about that, some of his favorite guys that he sees. And I'm always intrigued with every draft evaluator that I talk to. Who are the guys that they like more than it seems like everybody else does and why that is? And just how specific that could be situationally to the Bears, to whoever. It's tough to evaluate guys within a vacuum because, you know, the NFL, probably more than any of the major sports, is so scheme dependent. And I think it's also the one that we know the most about those schemes, more or less, of what skill set everybody, what most teams want in each position skill set. To a point, even within the lines of scrimmage, I think we're getting there. With more and more analysis out there on line play, I think we're getting there. So we'll talk about that. If there are any players that you want to know about, for one thing, starting tomorrow, because today's Sunday, I had to look, be like, wait a minute, today is Sunday. Yes. Starting tomorrow on Bernstein and McKnight, we're going to have Who's Your Guy? So we're going to be doing that all this week. But also, if there's anybody individually you want to hear Greg's thoughts about, text it in at 670-11. We get to those guys, cool. But I want to talk conceptually too, because this Raiders thing, the thing that came out on Friday from Ian Rappaport of the Oakland Raiders sending all their scouts home, the initial reaction was a flood of, holy crap, what just happened here? This doesn't sound functional. But then you have more and more guys as time's gone on that have had jobs in the league being like, it's an extreme version, but it's something that has happened. So we'll talk to Greg next at the top of the hour. I'm Rick Camp with you until 9 o'clock on The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.